Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We will begin the Nominating Committee Workshop, 2011 Nominating Committee Workshop. Good afternoon, thank you. My name is Adam Peake. I'm chair of the 2011 Nominating Committee. With me are Vanda Scartazzini, who is the incoming chair, 2012 NOMCOM Nominating Committee, and Rob Hall, who is the 2013 Nominating Committee chair. We also have some members of the 2012 Nominating Committee in the room, which is very good to see. And the purpose of today's meeting is really to review the work that was done in 2011 and then explain what the Nominating Committee does and is, our outcomes, and then a little bit of forward-looking information about what we anticipate for 2012. So, Joette, if we could go to the first slide. And these are the members of the 2011 committee. I won't go through them by name, but there is a long list of about 20-21 people, I seem to remember. People are taken from throughout, or the delegates are nominated from throughout the ICANN community, a very diverse group in terms of geographic region and from where they come from. And this is a very good self-protecting mechanism against capture and against abuse and all kinds of things that one would want to avoid in a process that is nominating leadership of an organization. It's a large committee, very diverse in where the people come from, and I think it's a quite good self-protecting mechanism. And I would like to thank the committee because they were very good to work with, a great bunch, a great group of people. So, the Nominating Committee is established to place over a three-year cycle half of the ICANN voting board of directors, members of the CCNSO, GNSO, and ALAC. And what we do, Nominating Committee is somewhat misnamed in that the first thing that we do is the first thing that we're tasked to do is actually recruit. So we're building a candidate pool, and this is the information about the pool of candidates that we selected. And this took place over the period from December to January, so December 2010 to April of 2011. And that was essentially recruitment using what we call statements of interest, and a statement of interest is an application form. We received 88 statements of interest, the 88 candidates, 56 were men, 23 women. 23 women is the highest number of female applicants we've had, and very pleased to have seen that. It's an important increase. And then you see the regional diversity, and this is, again, I think quite good, 19 from Africa, 24 Asia-Pacific, or Asia, Australia-Pacific, 14 Europe, 15 Latin America, Caribbean, and 16 from North America. So there's a pretty good spread there, and that was pleasing to see. Also, in the positions that we were selecting for, we had to select two directors, and they serve for three-year terms, two members of the GNSO Council, three representatives for the ALAC, and those are serving for the Africa, the Asia-Pacific, Australia region, and North America. And is that correct? Africa, Asia-Pacific, Australia, and yeah, the CCNSO. And what was interesting is that in previous years, there's been a strong preference amongst candidates for the board of director positions. And while I think about 53 or 4 of our 88 candidates said that they preferred the board of directors, we actually had a very good spread of candidates interested in the other positions. So we were able to choose from a strong pool of candidates for all of the positions that we had to fill. So another good achievement for the year, I think. Our selections for the board of directors, we appointed Steve Crocker, and many of you will know that Steve is currently the chair of board of directors. Judith Vasquez, who is from the Philippines and is a entrepreneur and a very successful business lady from the IT sector. GNSO Council Lanre is from Nigeria and is a leader in the African ISP community. Thomas Rickert is a leader in, again, he's actually ISP and intellectual property lawyer from Europe. TT is the at-large, and she is Nigerian, working in South Africa, and is well known as one of the, used to be very active in United Nations systems and internet governance and IT for development arena. Renalia used to run an organization called Global Knowledge Partnerships and is a very experienced working in not-for-profit organizations. Carlton Samuels is from the Caribbean and has been one of the vice chairs of the at-large and was returned to that position. Hong Zhu joined the CCNSO Council and is very well known for her leadership work within the IDN activities of ICANN. So I think we're very pleased with the quality of candidates, and this is a great group of people to bring into ICANN, but also to come back into, you know, to retain into ICANN. So we were very pleased to have these people there. Going forward, these are the names again repeating over, so I won't go over these in another time. This particular slide explains how we go about our work. So it's typical that a nominating committee will meet for the first time after the close of the AGM, i.e. this meeting. Vanda's committee will begin on Friday afternoon. They begin their term starting with the AGM, so it's annual general meeting to annual general meeting, and our meeting last year was on the 10th and 12th of December in Cartagena. We then, during that period of main activity, which was January to June, we had 10 teleconference calls, so most of our work ongoing was through teleconferences. So you can see that's just working out about two a month is the average, and this is quite a high level of work. Certainly is for the first couple of months, I think we only had one call, and by the period when we were doing our selections, we were actually discussing once a week and quite long and quite intense calls, discussing candidates, and it was quite hard work. So thinking about the phases of the work we did, as I mentioned, the first part of the nominating committee work is really about recruitment and outreach and trying to build a candidate pool of people with the skills that we want to see within ICANN and ICANN's leadership. We held various outreach events in Geneva, Brussels, attended meetings in Hong Kong and San Francisco. Individual members, of course, were doing their own outreach. What we're trying to do is, we sponsored a cocktail, we organized meetings, and it was really trying to do different types of outreach to both within the ICANN community, but also to other internet governance-related activities, such as the Internet Governance Forum, also with a group in Brussels of it's an internet technology advisory group that works with some of the European parliamentarians. So all kinds of outreach, trying to bring in different people into the ICANN community, but also trying to spread news about the ICANN multi-stakeholder model, because the nominating committee is quite unique. If you think about, you know, over this three-year period, we are selecting, you know, half of the voting board of directors, and that is quite an unusual process, that you actually have a sort of bottom-up, community-driven process that really does establish the voting leadership of the organization. So the nomination period and the period of taking applications was December to April. The next slide, please. Oop, back one. Where are we? Slide number 9. Yeah. And the next part of the work is the evaluation phase. And we have an online database system which we use, which has a polling mechanism. First of all, it's a way of storing all of the candidate information in a confidential way. The nominating committee is a confidential process. We find every member and everybody who comes in contact with information about candidates signs a code of conduct, which is very strict, and we abide by very closely. That is on the nominating committee website. And we use a database that has all this information, but it also has a polling feature, which allows us to begin an assessment of each of the candidates, and we can do that on an individual basis and then collate those results and begin to see how we evaluate the different applications. One of the first tasks we did was to identify our top 25 candidates for the director positions, and those were invited to be interviewed by a professional assessment company called Odgers Bernstein, and that was a quite lengthy interview process. People were being interviewed for an hour and a half, 2 hours at times, with a set of professional questions about, you know, director recruitment. And the output from those interviews is a valuable record that goes alongside the application itself, which is a rich source of information, and also a series of references that we ask each candidate to provide. So you end up with a very comprehensive view, or quite a comprehensive view, of what this person is. The next stage was to look at the other positions we were selecting for, the ALAC, GNSO, and CCNSO, doing what we call a deep dive, and that means simply investigating further. Again, looking at the statements of interest, looking at the references that people have provided, going to third parties to ask people about the candidate if they knew them, using search engines and so on and so forth. And this was done by subdividing the nominating committee into smaller teams so that they could take a batch of applicants and look at their information in more detail. The thing is that when you have candidates, we want to get a good knowledge of every candidate. It's, you know, if somebody has volunteered information, it's our duty, I think, to them to look into their application in as much detail as possible. It's, I think, a respectful thing to do. So we try and understand and give them the best chance possible. The next portion was, again, we have these 25 director candidates who are in a process of elimination, essentially. And by the time we got to the ICANN meeting in Singapore, we decided to invite 11 of these people for an interview. 8 of them were able to make it for a face-to-face interview, and 3 were done by video conference. Some of the people we know extremely well, and but it's always extremely useful to have the full nominating committee, so there were 20 people there interviewing the candidates. And this was, it's a rich source of information and helps us in our process. Not all nominating committees have done this. It's a process of really trying to learn as much as possible about the candidates that you have. And then the final process is selection. And after the attending the ICANN meeting in Singapore, we disappeared to a close-by resort. And it sounds glamorous, but it was actually, I think, possibly even a little bit cheaper than staying in the main hotel. It's very nice, though. But it gets you away and gets you to be able to concentrate on the task of reading and thinking about people and the qualities and so on and so forth. So we spent 2.5 days basically in a selection process, and we came up with the candidates we came up with as our choices. Then there was a process of due diligence, and this is performed by an international firm called the Mintz Group. They do due diligence on the director candidates in quite some degree of detail. This is to be expected. I think they have a fiduciary responsibility to the organization. It's good to know. I think most people have probably read of quite famous people who suddenly have decided to invent that they have a degree that they didn't have, and this can be embarrassing whether you're a member of the United States Congress or a German minister who might have decided that he you know, there was a recent case of a plagiarized PhD. Well, this is the kind of thing we do not want to happen. We also have to find out if someone, for example, has been disbarred from being a director. Do they have any criminal record? And these are the types of things you want to avoid, and I think due diligence is an extremely important process for the director candidates. My personal opinion, and I will make a personal comment, I do not think that it is particularly necessary for the other positions we select. We do actually conduct due diligence on our candidates. We select for the at-large, the GNSO and the CCNSO, and I think that is probably generally unnecessary. None of the other people who join the CCNSO, ALAC and GNSO go through that process. It does cost money, and I think it's probably unfair, but that's my personal opinion, so I will now put a 2011 nominating committee chair hat back on and say we did conduct due diligence on them, and after that we made our announcements of candidates on the 5th of August 2011. This was a little bit earlier than usual. Most nominating committees have waited until September. Again, we were trying to speed up the process. Candidates have to wait an awful long time without really knowing what's going on, and speeding things up was important, and I'm pleased we were able to do that. What happens now is that you will see at the annual general meeting on Friday, the directors will have this immaculate transformation where the old directors will leave the stage and the new directors will assume their positions on the stage and take their seats. The same thing happens for the at-large, the GNSO and the CCNSO. And at the same time, I cease to be the nominating committee chair and Vanda takes over for 2012. And with that, that's the process that we go through. I hope it's explained reasonably clearly. What we're trying to do is be more transparent. I think we're also trying to be more professional in the sense that we're trying to be clearer that, yes, there is a process, if you like, of elimination. You know, it's a careful process, one that is done in, I hope, a thoughtful and fair way, but it is becoming more and more like a recruitment process for a job. What we do not do yet is tell candidates that, you know, we're sorry you haven't made it through to the second phase, and perhaps that's something that future nomcoms will do. But we do also have, or at least the nominating committee in 2011 had, something we reminded ourselves of very often, that no candidate is excluded until the final decision is made. Anybody can be brought back into the process at any time. And in fact, we did that with a couple of people for a couple of positions. Even though it looked like we were going through a sort of process of elimination to reach a smaller and smaller pool, no, we were considering statements of interest in candidates at any stage. So it's not quite the same as being said, you know, halfway through an application process for a job, you get a letter and say, "Dear Adam, thank you for your application, but you haven't been successful." We don't feel quite, or I didn't feel able to quite do that, because we did genuinely want to have the ability to bring people back at any stage of the process. But it is moving in that direction, and I think that's worth getting on the record. How Vanda treats this will be up to her and her committee, but we will see how that goes. I'm very, very pleased. I thought the committee members were wonderful. It was great to work with them, and I'm very pleased with that. And I'm proud of the people we selected. We made our selections unanimously, and that was very pleasing. One last thing we were asked to do was there was a midterm vacancy for the at-large, the North American region. So we reconvened at one stage and we were able to go through a selection process where we announced another recruitment stage where people were allowed to resubmit or submit new statements of interest. And we came up within about 6 weeks or 2 months, I think, or 6 weeks perhaps.
Yeah,
less than that. We were able to come up with a candidate again. We're very pleased, Ganesh Kumar, and so we had an extra process. And that was really it for the 2011 committee. Vanda may wish to make a comment, and then, well, take it from there.
Okay, thank you, everybody, for being here. I'm not the chair of the 2012 yet, just after the the end of the assembly in Friday morning. So till then, I'm just member of this 2011 committee. And a lot of things that we have done in this committee was really interesting. One thing that was quite interesting was to have direct interview of selected people in front of the whole committee. This brings a lot of advantage, in my point of view, because, you know, allow the candidate to perform like the how they will, and day by day, sitting in the ALAC or GNSO or even the board, they will perform when they sit in front of the other candidates, you know, pushing with a lot of questions, need to respond quickly, and, you know, express their opinion. And you can see mostly the subjective issues that the person are bringing. And because some of those questions that have been made in the past is, in my opinion, too general. And we cannot evaluate the person based on general questions. Because most of the people can, you know, paper can get everything. So we need to have more face-to-face contact with the people. Even if the people cannot show up, we can talk with them by teleconference or some, you know, in the way to keep in touch with this person and better understand what is his personality and his interests, his mostly his passion about this entire environment. So it's changed the way we make the expression of interest. Is one thing that we need to do and be more specific about what people want to apply for. If for the board, so we have some specific question. If it's for a lack, another specific questions that we are trying to talk with those communities and bring more feedback from them to make sure that the questions are right to get the right answers. So that's one thing that I do believe was very good from this 2011, and we need to continue to do that, is this interview. The other thing that is quite important is to have the help of the community to outreach, to spread the word around our communities around the world. Because a lot of people never heard about ICANN. And sometimes they don't understand how they can help this organization. And we lose a lot of talents around because we don't reach them in time, or we reach and cannot convince them. So we need all the power we have through the community to reach those people, to talk with them, to allow them to enter into the website, and even, you know, send them more questions for the non-com group. Whatever, the most important issue is to have a pool of candidates that could be, you know, very, very good talents that, you know, they are there around the world. We need to reach them. And to reach them, the only way is to count on your help. Your personal help, you know, talk with the friends, think about yourself, think about what I can do. I don't have time, but my friend here has a time, so he could apply. I have the talent for that, or I don't have, but or I don't care about that, but I know someone that cares about that. So it's something that we need the help of the whole community around the world to reach the correct talents that we need for all positions in ICANN. So those are the first thoughts that we have is new questions for the applicants, more specific, more clear, to allow people to make the statements very clear, and for us to select them with more fairness in some way. And the other thing that we certainly need to do, probably it's something to be the debate, but probably we're going to use, wow, it looks fantastic. Yeah, keep your laptop open. I can see you. And the mic are you. I'm going. I have no problem with that. Yeah.
You so, look lovely by the light of your screen, though. So.
Yeah. Well, it's another view.
Yes.
It's another view. So the other thing we normally ask for an international organization to make separate interviews, to not be driven for only one side of thoughts. So, but the important issue is to guarantee that those person will have other questions, but same focus. We need to and so the first issue we need to do is interview the interviewers, because we need to guarantee that they understand what they are asking for. Because I've been through this process sometimes, and I know that some question has no sense at all, and the interview has no opportunity to make it clear and how as a candidate can be more helpful, or how can explain. And this, we cannot rely on people that really don't know about what they are doing here. So it's something that we need to align a little bit about what we have done for the last years. And I do believe that the interviewers will help at least to keep them aware about what we believe it's meaningful to be asked for the candidates, and what is not, and what has no sense at all that sometimes we heard about. So it's because this influences the whole process of decision, because some of the members can be influenced most for the opinion of someone that it's not quite, aware about the needs of this organization. So that's something that we're going to do. I guess it's most of that we're going to move on that. And we hope we have more application, and a lot of we need to improve the balance of gender too. So to have more women around, some of us are tired to be, surrounded about only men. Not a bad thing, but not always the wrong decision, but sometimes it's good to have other kind of a way to think. That's the woman way to think. So it's important to have a balance, and to have also geograph and new faces around too. It's quite important. We need to have a balance with the experience and new ideas. So everything depends on the way you spread the word and bring more people to apply. So that's the important thing that we need to talk about, and how can we help. So we Rob and I and Adam also will be till the end of the week around here. So if you have questions, please approach and just stop us and make a question, and I'll be happy to, you know, do our best to explain. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rob Hall, and I have become the chair-elect on Friday, which means I'll be chairing the 2013 nominating committee. My job is new and, for the first time, very different. So in the past, the nominating committees had a chair that was appointed by the board and a past chair to help that chair through their first year. The ATRT recommendations said, no, that's kind of backwards. What you ought to have is a chair-elect who can learn the job for a year from the chair and then be chair. So this is the bylaws changed last year in the middle of the nominating committee cycle. The board, for the first time, has appointed a chair-elect, and I have the honor of serving in that. So my job really is to do what Vanda has been not able to do, which is to get ahead of the game, if you will. So my year is spent planning the next year. So traditionally, there's been some things like we couldn't go out and ask for, like per Adam here has had to do all the work for asking for the candidates to the nominating committee that will be making the decisions. I have the luxury of starting communicating with the various organizations that send us our nominating committee members, starting in the spring now, as opposed to having to wait until this meeting to really start doing anything. So I am in a unique position, I think. I will try and make the most of it, but certainly what I'm looking for starting now is input on what you think should be different in the 2013 and what things I should be moving upstream more and taking care of in the spring and summer, as opposed to waiting until the fall when the AGM happens, when has traditionally been by bylaw, the new chairwoman in this case cannot do anything. So it's unique, it's new, it comes out of the community's recommendations on how to make changes, and I'm pleased to try and, with your help, figure out exactly what a chair-elect should be doing. I'm also going to be concentrating on writing the procedure manuals for the nominating committee. I've sat on two previous ones. I will now sit on two again. It seems that we debate over and over often administrative type things because there's been great secrecy between one and the other. And so I've been asked if I will write by the Board Governance Committee, I've been asked if I will write a document that details a lot of the administrative type policies and procedures that go on in the nominating committee so that future committees may refer to that rather than having the same long debates about what should we do and what did previous committees do and that type of thing. So we're hoping to create a document with the Board Governance Committee that can be passed to future chairs and chairs-elects and say, here's what you do. This is the way forward. You don't need to debate about, you know, is this within confidentiality or not, that type of thing that we often spend a lot of time debating. So I too welcome your input. I have the luxury of the input starts now and continues, so please do not feel there's deadlines because we are actually in the process of dealing with the 2012 committee and starting the plan for the 2013 for the first time ever. So please keep them flowing regardless of what's happening with the current 2012 committee timetable. Thank you.
Okay. One thing that I omitted to mention, forgot to mention, is that this year, for the first time, we also tried to engage a professional recruitment agent to help us find candidates. The nominating committee's job is basically to find the candidates, but it's also an evolving process. Different nomcoms will respond to community ideas of how to do better outreach or gain a better candidate pool. I know that nominating committees in the past, for example, have used advertisements in newspapers and magazines, and that was generally found not to be successful. This year it was suggested to us that in addition to our own recruitment, then we should use a professional management recruitment agent and see if they could find some director candidates. We thought we would just ask them to look for directors. Unfortunately, it didn't work very well. And the reason that the recruiter told us is that, of course, that this is an international firm with a they have people at a very senior level from every part of the world. They were particularly strong in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean, they told us, and as well as being European-based themselves. And so they said they'd be very happy to reach out to their network of people and say, would you be interested in volunteering for ICANN? The reason they gave for not being very successful at all, they actually found as only one candidate, was that they said the first reaction from people of this type to serve on an executive board was, is it paid? People who serve on the directors of, as a director of large corporations typically receive some payment. It's usually not enough money to, you know, these are generally quite wealthy people because they may serve on the board of a multinational. They're not necessarily looking for a large sum of money, but it is typical within that type of community or that type of activity to receive a payment, and there is no payment. And the recruiter said that was kind of like the shutter coming down a little bit, and that was the sort of reaction. It was, oh dear, no, not so interested now. And then you tell them that ICANN directors work probably on total about 2 days a week. Actually, it's almost a daily task. You can't let it slip. It's too much work. If you were on the executive board of a multinational corporation, think of someone like Shell or, you know, Ford Motor Company, or it might be 1 or 1.5 days a month, not 1.5 or 2 days a week. So the fact that there was no remuneration and no payment made that exercise somewhat futile. It was not a very expensive exercise, and we believe that the experiment was well worth trying, even though it was not successful. So we will wait and see, and perhaps a future NomCom will try again. But who knows? But we welcome ideas as well in how can we do recruitment better. Advertising in The Economist magazine and International Herald Tribune didn't work very well 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Management recruitment agent didn't work very well this year. But we're always interested in new ideas for how to do this job better. With that, please, we'd be very interested in your questions and your comments if you have them. I know we also have some people remotely. So any question or comment would be gratefully received.
Yes.
This is Olaf Nordling, and we've got a comment from Kieran McCarthy online, and he says a comment regarding input for NomCon process changes. Why doesn't a NomCon provide a box on the application this year which says, I wish to make my application public, just a box. People can tick it or not tick it, and underneath that box reads, whether or not you choose to make your application public will have no bearing whatsoever on your application. End of comment.
Well, hi, Karen. This is Vanda talking. I personally have no problem with that, but the bylaws is saying that it's confidential. It's confidential. So I do believe that to change that or to give the option for the person, it needs to change the bylaws. So could be a good idea. We are talking about many other ideas about the role of NomCon and how NomCon should proceed, but it's one idea, for instance, for to debate about that. If it's someone wants to be announced previously, no problem. But in fact, nowadays we have a bylaw saying that all the information is confidential. It's not for the discretion of the user. Thank you.
Hi, it's Rob Hall. I'll answer it slightly differently, perhaps, Kieran, for you. I'll point out that there is absolutely nothing that stops any candidate at any time from saying they have applied. This is completely within their power. There is no requirement on the candidate not to announce they've applied. In fact, I believe there was a woman from Russia last year that at a public conference did announce that she had applied and even where she was in the process. So there is certainly nothing that stops a candidate from announcing that. However, Vanda is quite correct. We are governed by the ICAM bylaws, which say we cannot disclose the candidates. Now, the committee last year, with the help of Maria Farrell, started blogging. We are certainly going to make much more use of that this year. Our plan is to blog where we are in the process so that candidates may get a better understanding and, in general, and in fact, the community as a whole may get a general understanding of where we are. So as you can imagine, it's very difficult. We can't go back midstream and tell a candidate, of the 90 that apply, we quickly narrow down to 25. After the first couple months, we then narrow down to typically 10 or so for each of the positions. At each level, there's more and more due diligence and interviewing being done. We in the past have not told candidates, I'm sorry, you didn't make the final 25. There's still a chance you could, because we can bring a candidate back at any time and put them back into the final process, if you will. This year, we still will not be telling candidates they did or did not make it. We will simply be informing publicly both candidates and the community where we are in our processes, and the candidate can draw their own inference from that. So I think one of the goals is certainly to start feeding back to candidates where we can in a way that's appropriate, and certainly to, maybe perhaps are making a clearer statement on the statement of interest or application form, if you will, that the candidate is free to publicly disclose if they so desire, but that we will not be. Thank you.
And there are two more comments from Kieran McCarthy. First one is another suggestion: make the NomCom procedures and meeting dates public. And a comment back to Rob. The issue is cultural default. The Russian woman that went public last year was heavily criticized for doing so. The NomCom need to make it clear that people will not be penalized if they go public. End of comment. Oh, there's another one. Question from Kieran McCarthy. Has a candidate ever been pulled back into the pool when the shortlist is made? Has that ever happened in NomCom history? Now I think it's the end of sequence.
Kieran, it's Rob Hall again. I'll take your last question first. Absolutely is my answer. Candidates are all considered right until the end. I have to be very careful here in that I've been a member of two nominating committees. For both, we've had to sign a confidentiality document, so I can't talk to the specifics of the discussions that happened or the individual candidates, but I can tell you that in the past, not only have candidates been re-looked at after the fact, but candidates that may have applied for different positions have been considered for other ones. For example, we may have had a candidate that applied for the board and shown interest in the board position that we have said, wow, I think this person might be great for the ALAC or the GNSO position or CCNSO positions, and we have approached the candidate and asked if they'd be interested in those positions considered them for those positions. So, yes, I am quite confident on the committees I've been on that the candidates are considered across the board and are continually considered right up until the last. So you'd be surprised during the debate how often a candidate might be put in one position and where they might have been, being considered as a finalist for another, and that means we need a bigger pool, so we go back to the pool and start looking at them again, or because of things like geographic diversity, where we must appoint candidates from certain regions, you often have to go back to the pool when you've not done that already or already done that. So it's quite an intense 2 or 3 day process the nominating committee goes through, but I assure you that all candidates are considered And no one has ever ruled out because they weren't considered the first, or didn't make the first cut, if you will. Olaf, what was the first question? I think I'd probably best to take that, and then Adam will take the second one.
I'll take both.
Okay, Adam's going to take both. All right.
On the procedures have recently been updated and they're available on the nominating committee website. It's an important aspect because the nominating committee makes its own rules essentially, and those procedures are mandated by the bylaws as the way that we operate, and they're a significant document in and of themselves. They need to be updated again. They have to reflect the ATRT, the accountability and transparency requirements, which have just come in. But if you look on the nominating committee website, which is a useful website, I hope, for all of you, which is nomcom.icann.org, so nomcomicann.org, then the procedures are there and they reflect the processes that we followed this year. Regarding the person who it became known that she was a candidate, I don't want to go into detail of how far she got in the process. She wasn't selected, but I will say that she was one of the she was one of our strongest candidates, and she received full consideration and equal consideration. She was a very, very strong candidate, and I think I can leave it at that. If she gave me permission, I would mention other details, but she was a very strong candidate, and I think that's probably as far as I can say under our procedures. So it was not to her detriment that she was. It became known that she was a candidate. I think that's the two issues. Oh, but the microphone. No, the microphones are not on.
Yeah.
Oh, they're on. Yeah. Okay. I think that was all the three issues that Kieran mentioned. We have roving microphones or microphones that can be used in the hall if anybody has any questions about the nominating committee process. We've lost our screen. Yeah. So. Olaf again, please.
While you're still thinking about the questions in the room, we have a new question, well, actually two comments, or rather question. Kieran McCarthy asks, meeting dates public? ? And then we've got a comment from, or a question rather, from Siva Subramanian, with all reservations for the pronunciation. Is there a practice in NOMCOM to assign a member from a particular region and cultural background to pay special attention to a candidate from the same region and same cultural background for ease of assessment, and then go almost entirely by the opinion and assessment of this NOMCOM member? If so, does it always result in a fair assessment and a fair report on the candidate?
Okay.
And Well, let's stop there.
Let's try and deal with one at a time, so we'll get to them all. Just let's not ask five questions at once. So I'll deal with Kieran's first and then this gentleman's second. Kieran, yes, I can tell you what the dates of the nominating committee meetings are. We start on Friday. We meet this Friday and Saturday. The final selection dates start on Friday. It'll be at the Prague meeting and go Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that is typically where the selections are done. The nominating committee does not officially meet at the in-between meeting, which will be Costa Rica this year, in person. And then there are various telephone conferences that get scheduled throughout the year as we try and get to do our business. But the main in-person meetings are at this meeting for 2 days and 3 days at the what will be the Prague meeting. A lot of non-com members will be at the Costa Rica meeting, although we do not meet officially as a committee there. I think you'll find us on the blog this year starting to talk about our meetings more, the telephone meetings more, and as we update people on when we've met and what our status is and where we are in the process. The other gentleman's question was about regions, and my answer is absolutely yes. We do have a requirement to make sure that there is regional diversity on the board. The bylaws of ICANN say there must be at least one and no more than five members from each region. So this year, for example, the gentleman from Latin America is coming off the board. His term is expiring. We must pick one person from the Latin American and Caribbean region. That is a requirement of this Vanda's NOMCOM this year. The we cannot pick more than five from one region, so that is also another requirement. I should point out that the person currently holding the seat is also not term limited and welcome to reapply to get back onto the ICANN board, but has to go through the same process as everybody else. So specifically, we must appoint someone from Latin America this year. I think the second part of his question, Olaf, was more to do we hire people in the local regions to consider them. We contracted with ONB, which stands for Odgers Bernstein. ONB. They have the reason we contracted with them specifically is because of their international offices and locations and multiculturalism and language. So we are able to interview more often the candidate in the language, in their first language, if they so choose to. So the committee, through its formal interview process, does that. We've also started interviewing final candidates, both in person, but certainly last year, all those that could not make it to the meeting, we made sure we set up video conferencing facilities so that we could, you know, over a video link, over a video conference link, basically interview the person directly. So the whole committee was able to interview all the final 10 candidates, for example, for the board position to give us a sense of that. And they are more than welcome to have an interpreter present, although I would point out that I believe one of the bylaw requirements for a board member is that they must be able to act on the board in English because the language of the board is English, so they must be proficient enough to be a board member in English. But certainly we are well aware of the multicultural nature of ICANN, and in fact we have requirements to ensure that it stays that way. Was there another part of the message, Olaf? Maybe if I can hand back to you, or does Adam? Adam wants to add something, and then Olaf, let's just go one at a time.
Yeah. I wasn't entirely sure about the second part of the question. I think it's Siva, who is an at-large represent member and active at-large person. If it is, hello, Siva. And if perhaps we just make sure we understand your question, yes, as Rob was saying, we have regional requirements both for the board and for the at-large. Are cultural and other diversity characteristics important in the NOMCOM selection process? Yes, they are, but we're also looking for, you know, many, many other characteristics and experience, whether it's, you know, the knowledge of the DNS, depending on who you are. If it's an at-large skill, it may be about outreach and your ability to have contacts in the local community. But there's many skills that we look at, and certainly culture is only one of those many characteristics. If I understand, perhaps you were concerned that perhaps, you know, what the opinion of one NOMCOM member on this particular cultural aspect could be important. No, not really. It's a large committee of 20 people. We try to be inclusive, and when we do research into candidates, we always do it in teams. So there is always, you know, it's not just one person's opinion. You won't get a bias of one person affecting a candidate. At least I would hope you would not get that. We try to be as fair as possible, and we do that by, you know, researching in teams, by sharing our research, double checking, etc.
Yeah, Kieran, just compliment that. One thing for the ALAC members, for instance, is to consider the process to reach the ALAC, and fellowship program was one of those most important programs to reach people around. So once you have people that have passed through this process, they are much read than the others that didn't apply the first time to be and participate as a fellowship during one or two times. So we also consider this experience as very important to participate on ALAC and be member of the region for ALAC. There is one point that is I personally consider, and I guess all the others members also consider important, because give them the opportunity to have deeper knowledge, be touched by all information that they can during one or two meetings, and finally could apply and choose their position in this community. Thank you.
Yes, there is more. First of all, Kieran McCarthy saying thanks for the response, Bob, and that's been up there for quite a while. And also, IPv16.com, whoever that may be, great quote, inverted commas, if elections were allowed, the wrong people might be selected, end of quote. Any comments on that? That this is, quote, great quote. If elections were allowed, the wrong people might be selected. I think wherever that comes from.
Well, I guess we need to open for
you. We have 5 minutes.
We've got 5 minutes left, so is there anybody in the audience that would like to ask a question? And we'll think about Kieran's question about the election in a second. But is there anybody in the room who'd like to ask anything, any comments that any of you may have on what you've been hearing for the last 50 minutes or so? I don't know. Anybody? Elections and selections. I was involved a long time ago when there was an ICANN election of directors. After that election, I was involved in a study of how the election proceeded. And the process was not ideal, but I don't think anybody particularly complained about some of the people who were elected. There were some very fine directors, in my opinion. The election process was somewhat flawed. It might have been improved, but we've moved on since then. Anybody in the room have any comments and observations?
Just a follow-up on the election comment. Our job is to pick the board members, the GNSO, the CCNSO, and the ALEC members, full stop. ICANN has announced they will undertake a review of the nominating committee process within the next 2 years. That would be the appropriate time and forum to comment on elections. The nominating committee has a very defined and very clear and narrow mandate, and debate of whether the nominating committee should or should not do things, or whether that should be done through election, is outside our purview and should be referred to ICANN staff and to the ICANN board in the general comment forums. Our job is to do what the bylaws lay out, and that's what we're going to do to the best of our ability.
So we have a fairly long comment from Kieran McCarthy. So it goes like this. I've just read the NomCom bylaws. There is nothing that states you cannot make people's applications public. And it explicitly says that if the NomCom agrees and the individual gives their consent, that their application does not need to be confidential. So with that said, will the NomCom provide a box on the application this year which says, I wish to make my application public? And underneath that box, a note that reads, making your application public will have no bearing on your application. And it continues, the bylaws is a question. NomCom members will not disclose outside the committee any of the discussions, deliberations, communications, record, and notes about the candidates. Further, NomCom members and NomCom staff will not disclose outside the committee the identities of the candidates under consideration by the NomCom unless the NomCom as a whole has decided to do so. And the explicit consent of the candidate in question has been obtained. The NomCom can agree to make justified exceptions to this rule, for specific purposes, such as candidate assessment by an external consultancy and candidate travel support for face-to-face interviews. Confidentiality of candidate identities shall be assured in such exceptional cases. End of comment.
Kieran, it's Rob. I will take this. We cannot speak as to what the NOMCOM next year may do. As you are well aware, I'm sure the NOMCOM will start to sit and does not exist, in fact, until Friday. I know it will be a topic at this NOMCOM, as it has been at the previous ones I have sat on, but we are not in a position yet to speak as to what the NOMCOM under Vanda or any future NOMCOM will or will not do with that bylaw. The bylaw is very clear. It defaults to confidentiality. It would take, I believe it says, the entire NOMCOM to decide not to do that. And certainly Vanda and I, and indeed Adam here, do not represent by any means the entire NOMCOM. So I think the answer to your question is I am sure the NOMCOM will consider it and discuss it, but we cannot answer the question as you have posed it at this time, as the NOMCOM for next year has not officially been sat until after the close of the AGM on Friday.
Just as a data point, if I agree with Rob, there's, it's something that Vanda and her committee may wish to consider, and you know, fine, that's how it should be. As a data point, some years ago, one of the nominating committee chairs wrote to all of the people who'd previously been appointed by the NOMCOM. So these were the people who'd been successful, and I think it was over about a 4 or 5 year period. It was a few years ago, but it was about, the data point was about 5 years of appointees, and asked them, had the selection process been public, had your statements of interest been made as public documents, would you have still applied? And one third of those candidates responded, no, I would not have applied. So these were the people that the nominating committees had selected over about a five-year period, and a third of them said, had that process been open, no, they would not have applied. I live in Japan. I'm quite aware of traditions and cultures in Asia Pacific. Many senior people from the Asia Pacific would not participate in a process that was open. It simply is culturally not going to work for them. And I think probably parts of Europe and many people who are senior would not wish to perhaps go through what they see as embarrassment. Now, that may not be the culture that actually I personally come from. I wouldn't mind. But, you know, one has to respect the cultures of other people, and we want the best possible people applying. If you're losing a third of people who are NOMCOMs actually selected, then I think you have to say, let's think about this carefully. Although, you know, sympathies with what Kieran is suggesting. And we're up with time, 5 minutes over. Thank you very much for coming today. Hope it was useful. And we'd very much, I will speak for Vanda and say, I bet she'd love to hear from you with ideas for great candidates, people who can take on leadership positions in ICANN. Thank you very much for coming. Bye.
Thank you for all, and I hope you can help the outreach process for us. Thank you.